A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Force Heretic 3, Reunion, by Sean Williams and Shane Dix. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. Neither moved, neither spoke. They stared unflinchingly into each other's eyes. Surrounding her, hidden by shadows, Tahiri could sense an alien landscape. Soon, she told herself, it will all be over soon. Just another moment. But that moment seemed as long as the blackness around her was deep. She would endure a thousand such moments to ensure that the world below did not fall to Raina. Yes, that was it. Raina, the other girl's name. Tahiri could feel the girl's intentions as though they were her own. I will not succumb, she thought determinedly. I am Tahiri Vela. I am a Jedi Knight. And I am Raina of Domain Quad. The girl said in response, I shall not succumb either. With that, Tahiri's mirror image finally moved. Her hand went to her side and removed the lightsaber from her belt. A lightsaber, Tahiri thought, not an amphistaff. Raina wanted everything she had, and she fought with everything Tahiri had too. Han Solo fought the urge to wipe a droplet of sweat from his brow.
What's it to be, Solo?
Han went for a stall. Let me get this straight. It wasn't enough that you guys got tired of using integers, or that you weren't satisfied with just using real numbers either. You had to start messing with imaginary and trans-real numbers as well. The larval stage Ra'urian bounty hunter's face was locked in a sneer.
Do you have a problem with that?
One corner of Han's mouth curled up into a half-grin. So you're saying that we can use any arithmetic operation we like? We can divide, subtract, multiply.
I know what you're doing, growled a bad-tempered Given. You can't bluff us, Solo.
Perhaps the great Han Solo has lost his edge.
The fourth player, Talion, a Yarkora, with numerous gold rings dangling from each enormous nostril, uttered a contemptuous snort. Han glanced down at the chip cards in his hand. Or perhaps it's just that my math is a little rusty. He laid the cards on the table, resigning himself to winning the strangest game of sabacc he'd ever played. The three cube root of 23 chips that the last round had dealt him stared up at the ceiling in staves, flasks, and coins.
A cubic sabacc?
The Rurian's red eyes glittered dangerously in the bar's dim and smoky light as it glared at Han.
That's not possible.
It's not impossible, the Given snarled. Just extremely unlikely.
Hey, Han exclaimed. You're saying I cheated in a game I didn't even know existed until I docked here a couple of days ago?
He snorted derisively.
You're giving me a lot more credit than I deserve.
That's
all the credit you'll be getting,
the Rurian muttered, reaching forward with one of its many arms to scoop up the chips. Han grabbed the junction between the alien's two uppermost body parts and twisted sharply.
You touch my winnings, and then you'll see just how much of my edge I've lost.
Chairs scraped across the stony floor as the other two players backed away from the sabacc table. The thorny toe maintained a strict no-weapons policy, but that didn't mean that fights couldn't be lethal.
Overrated muck hauler!
The Ra'urian grunted, wriggling its lengthy body in an attempt to get free.
Who you calling overrated?
Han muttered, tightening his grip. Although low in mass, the alien could bend in places Han couldn't, making it difficult to maintain the upper hand. Just as he was beginning to think he'd taken on more than he could handle, two rough three-fingered hands grabbed both him and the Rurian, hauling them off the ground and separating them in midair.
Enough!
Han recognized the guttural accent of a Wyfid, and instantly ceased trying to kick his way out of the creature's grasp. He knew better than to fight a Wyfid. Their claw and tusks were as mean as their temperament. The bouncer forced its way through the crowd.
What sort of dive is this anyway?
Han protested to the closed door as he picked himself up and dusted himself down once more. His shoulder was tender where he'd hit the ground, and the bouncer's claws had left a few tears in his jacket. His comlink buzzed as he limped down the seedy back alley that housed the thorny toe. He pulled the comlink out of his pocket, knowing before he'd answered the call that it was Leia on the other end.
You're out?
And in one piece.
Did you find anything?
Nothing useful.
Is that fighting I hear?
The ruckus inside the bar was getting nastier by the second. My exit was none too subtle, he said, picking up the pace.
Start making your way back, then. It's not safe out there, Han.
Will do. Han rubbed his shoulder and hurried back to the Falcon, hoping Jaina had had better luck on the other side of town. Luke Skywalker gripped the sides of his seat as Jade Shadow emerged roughly from hyperspace. The bulkheads groaned under the strain, while containers of stored goods in the passenger bay could be heard crashing to the floor. What was that? He asked his wife, beside him in the pilot seat, when the disturbance had passed. Mara was already flicking switches and checking monitors. A hole the size of a Star Destroyer just opened up in front of us. Every hyperspace jump they'd made in the last couple of weeks had been fraught with danger and uncertainty. Let's just hope Widowmaker is okay. Lights flickered across the displays, and a new blip appeared on the scopes. Here she is now, Mara said. Seconds later, the voice of Captain Arian Yage sounded over the comm.
How about a warning or something next time?
Sorry about that, Arian. If we could give you a heads up, you know we would. The frigate was locked on Jade Shadow's navicomputer and would mirror every move Mara made through the shoals of the unknown regions. But there was no way to communicate through hyperspace, and therefore no way to warn of any sudden exits. This is getting annoying, Mara muttered after doing checks on her displays. I can't work out what I'm doing wrong. Luke was just as confused. Three times they'd tried and failed to jump the last parsec to where the empty system of Klaas Ephemera lay. She was a much better navigator than an astromech, and while it was pointless speculating on the capabilities of a world-sized intelligence like Zonama Seacott, he was sure she could match its flying abilities any day. Jag Fel sat by Tahiri's bed, staring curiously at the young girl for what must have been the 10th time in 2 hours. Every now and then she made a strange mewling noise, which sounded to Jag almost like a suppressed scream. Jaina had wanted to make sure that someone was at Tahiri's bedside at all times, in case she woke up. Jag was startled out of his brooding by the buzz of the comlink. He found himself in the middle of a joint conversation between Jaina and her parents.
Something fishy is definitely going on, Jaina was saying. At the thorny toe?
That was Han, speaking from the bridge of the Falcon.
The cubic sabacc gives it away. It's too unlikely. Someone let you win, Jaina said.
What about you, Jaina? Jag broke in. Did you find anything?
If I'd been stonewalled, I'd count myself as lucky. I haven't found a whiff of the Rin anywhere, and I'm not likely to now. Not now they're onto us,
Han said gloomily.
Worse,
Jaina said.
There's some sort of disturbance out here, A brawl of some kind, and it's spreading. How far are you from the Falcon?
Leia asked.
A dozen blocks, but it's getting tougher by the minute. Wait a second.
Jaina's end of the conversation went silent for a minute. Captain Maine's voice came over the comm.
We've got something of a situation here. There's a mob on our way, apparently. Any word on what caused it?
Leia asked.
They say that a Galactic Alliance agent attempted to infiltrate a secure compound and has made off with a fortune. Sorry,
Jaina said, coming back onto the line.
The way to the Falcon is blocked. I'm going to try for the Salonia instead. I'll prepare for liftoff,
said Maine.
We'll be away the moment she's on board, if that's what you decide.
Mon Calamari Communications Control, this is Farm Boy 1. Come in, MCCC. I repeat, this is Farm Boy 1. Please respond.
Silence. Jason sighed as he leaned tiredly back into his chair. While Luke and Mara rested, Jason was in charge of Jade Shadow. His failure to raise Mon Calamari troubled him, even though he knew there was probably a perfectly logical explanation. Communications with the unknown regions weren't ideal. All transmissions were routed through a bottleneck on the edge of the outer rim.
MCCC, this is Farm Boy 1. This is an emergency. We require an immediate response.
What's the emergency? Jason turned to see Danny silhouetted in the doorway. She moved around to take position in the co-pilot seat beside him.
I can't raise Mon Cal, he said. There seems to be some sort of break in transmission between here and there.
She reached out to pat him reassuringly on the shoulder, but her hand never fell. Something powerful and strange rolled through him.
You can feel that?
Whatever it was getting stronger, and it was coming through the Force. Danny nodded, covering both ears with the flats of her palms.
What is it?
I don't know. He turned to the displays ahead of him, searching for information. But I intend to find out. Saba started awake from a deep sleep, feeling as though someone were trying to crack open her skull. No alarms were ringing. She couldn't smell panic pheromones in the air. Everything seemed completely normal, except for the fact that the crack in her skull seemed to be widening.
It could only be one thing.
Saba hurried forward through the ship. She could tell that the others gathered there shared her excitement. Master Skywalker, Mara, Jason, Tekly, Danny, they could all feel it.
Can't be sure at this range, Mara was saying, addressing the others standing around in the passenger bay.
It could be anything. Massive psychic disturbances occur for all sorts of reasons. Master Skywalker nodded.
She's right, Jason. When Alderaan was destroyed by the Death Star, Obi-Wan felt it from a great distance.
I know, but this is close,
Jason insisted, his voice thick with excitement.
I can feel it. What else could it be?
Saba could sense the others wanting to believe, but remaining reluctant to gamble on the young Jedi's hunch.
Jason is right, she said. Zonama Seacott cries out in the void.
The Jedi Master faced her.
But why?
It feels distressed.
Okay, suppose it is Zonama Seacott, Mara said.
What then? Do we attempt to contact it?
That depends on whether you think you can follow the signal to its source. The red-haired woman frowned.
It's possible, but I'm not sure I like the idea of turning up uninvited.
Luke turned to the barrable.
Jason, Saba, you're our life sensitives. What do you think?
Jason looked uncertain.
I can no more read this mind than I could the entire contents of the Chiss library.
Saba told Luke.
Won't going closer make this situation worse, though?
Danny asked. Master Skywalker looked uncertain.
All I'm sure of is that this is our best shot at getting where we want to go. If we ignore it,
We might never get another one.
Mara inhaled deeply. Okay, then let's do it while we still can.
Maybe we should meld, Luke said. Pooling our concentration might make it easier for Mara to trace the source.
Saba began the familiar exercises with a series of deep breaths. She felt the life sparks of those around her, glowing like embers in a white-hot furnace. Mara's mind danced with hyperspace coordinates, instrument panels, and other spaceflight paraphernalia. Saba added her perceptions of the distant world mind to the mix of thoughts and impressions gathering around Mara. Danny offered the clearest knowledge of astronomical forces. Mara took everything she was given and plotted a course. Jade Shadow's hyperdrive roared into life, and Saba felt the familiar sensation of lights streaking past them and falling behind as the strange topology of hyperspace enfolded them. The hull vibrated as Mara plunged the ship headlong through the strange spaces surrounding their objective. Then, rattling like an old freighter, they were dumped back into real space. The screens were alive with data. There was a sun blazing on one, a gas giant looming on another. A faint green-blue speck hung in the center of a third screen. And it was to this that Saba's senses clung.
Zonama Seacot.
But as the view zoomed in closer, she saw yellow and bright red clouds blossoming as energy weapons flashed and flared around the atmosphere. And that wasn't all. What Saba saw behind the space battle was completely beyond her experience. Bright feathery ribbons trailed from the planet's poles like liberated coronas. Fleeting sprites danced in the upper atmosphere, sending towering flashes of energy spiking far above. Massive sheets of lightning swept around the equator, gathering speed until they joined in a smooth ring. Then, with a piercing crack, they lashed out and up like a whip of pure energy. Zonama Seacot's attackers were obviously Yuuzhan Vong vessels. Two mid-sized cruiser analogs and countless numbers of coral skippers. But they weren't the only ships in the air. Zonama Seacot was fighting back. Anger blazed, ugly in its ferocity, devastating in its efficacy. And with it came a return of the storm. Saba barely had time to wonder what would happen when the mind they'd been seeking finally noticed them. When a wall of psychic energy struck them, tossing them into oblivion. On the Falcon, tempers were flaring.
We can't leave yet, Han insisted. Not until we know Jaina's all right.
She's safe, Han, you know that. She's on her way back to the Salonia. Through sensors on the ship's hull, Leia could hear the baying of the mob that had converged on the Falcon's landing field. Han rubbed at his temple as though he had a headache. On the screens before him were views of the cordon around the Falcon's dock, along with various patches from local feeds. What about the Rin? He asked more calmly. Leia didn't have an answer ready for that. Her thoughts had been focused on Jaina too. But she supposed that was a consideration. Back on Bakura, Gower had sent them to Onadax on the pretext that another Rin would meet them there. Thus far, still, there had been nothing.
I don't know, she said. Maybe Gower got it wrong.
The Rin network is slow, remember? Maybe... A furious pounding from the belly of the ship brought the discussion to a halt. Han flicked further switches as Leia dropped into the seat beside him. He scanned through various security cam angles, while she brought the retractable repeating blaster to life. Through one of the cams, they saw a gangly figure banging on the belly hatch with a hefty metal rod. The alien's face was obscured by a fogged-up visor, but apart from this, there was nothing overtly suspicious or threatening about him or her.
Fire a warning shot, Han said. That'll fix him.
That might not be such a good idea, Han. It could be taken as a sign of aggression.
It's intended to be a sign of aggression, Leia, he shot back.
I'm not firing, Han. She sat back in her chair with her arms folded resolutely across her chest. He looked at her for a moment, then rolled his eyes. With an annoyed grunt, he heaved himself out of the pilot's seat and headed off down the corridor, muttering something about mutiny under his breath. Leia continued with the pre-flight warm-up he'd started, all the while keeping one eye on the belly cam covering the ramp. With a clunk and a whirr, it opened wide enough to allow Han to bellow a warning to the insistent alien. Leia watched the animated exchange between the two of them, although she couldn't read lips well enough to work out exactly what was being said. Whatever it was, though, it resulted in the alien briefly lifting his mask, which in turn prompted a look of stunned amazement from Han. She didn't see the alien's face, so it came as a complete surprise when Han lowered the ramp the rest of the way and gestured for the alien to come aboard.
Jade Shadow, please respond!
Captain Mayne's voice dragged Luke out of what felt like a very deep pit. The world was shaking around him, and a roaring sound filled his ears. Somewhere beyond the haze caused by the intense mental attack, he could feel Saba, Danny, and Tekly nearby, all out cold. And beside him, his wife, wrestling with the controls.
"We're kind of busy right now, Captain," she said. "We'll get back to you the first chance we get, okay?"
Before Widowmaker could respond, Mara switched off the comm unit so there would be no more interruptions.
"Where?"
Luke started, but his throat was too dry to get the words out.
"Where are we?"
"Coming into land," she replied. Through the cockpit's canopy, Luke could see the lush vegetation of the planet below. He glanced at his wife. The bags under her eyes were heavy and dark.
"Are you all right?"
"I guess," she said distractedly.
"What happened?"
"I'm not sure. It felt like a force punch, only 100 times more powerful. Whatever it was, it managed to knock out everyone on the ship and keep them unconscious too."
"But not yourself?" Luke asked.
Mara shrugged. "One minute I'm out like the rest of you, the next I'm awake and listening to Jason take instructions over the comm."
"Jason?"
"He woke first. He thinks it was Zonama Seacott that knocked us out and woke him up later. But it was definitely someone on the surface who gave him coordinates and an approach corridor. He just finished explaining that he wasn't the best person to pilot the ship when I woke up. That'd be the planet too, I guess. When I told him I would need to confer with you, the people on the ground said that wasn't an option. Given what the Shadow's recordings show, I didn't think arguing with them was the most sensible thing to do."
"What do you mean?"
"Take a look for yourself," she said, flipping a switch to begin the playback of the recording. Luke turned to the monitor and viewed the footage Jade Shadow's instruments had managed to capture while the crew was insensate. It showed the Yuuzhan Vong ships he had glimpsed on their arrival, along with the spectacular pyrotechnic display put on by the planet. He watched with awe as the alien ships fell back under the local defense forces. Zonama Seacott's defenders hunted down the fleeing ships and destroyed them one by one. When the recording had finished, Luke turned back to Mara.
"Are there any left?"
"All destroyed, as far as I can tell."
"Why didn't we end up like them?" he asked.
Mara glanced at him sidelong as she brought the repulsors online.
"There's only one way to know for sure. That's to talk to the natives."
Jade Shadow sat down perfectly in a broad grassy field, surrounded on all sides by steep forest walls.
"Welcome to Zonama Seacott," Jason said from behind them.
Luke half turned to study his nephew. Jason's eyes were fixed on the view through the cockpit's massive transparasteel canopy. On the surface of the planet outside, life swirled through the branches of the trees in a variety of colors and forms. Stepping out from a narrow gap in the trees were two individuals. Both were tall and thin, with icy pale blue skin and wide gold-black eyes. The male's hair was a deep black, while the woman swept back in a wave of pure white.
"Well," Luke said, glancing at his wife. Here are the natives.
Jason went to leave the cockpit, but Luke took his arm.
I'd rather you waited here with R2 to keep an eye on the others.
Jason looked for a second, as though he might argue.
That makes sense. Just call if you need help.
Mara keyed the airlock open and waved Luke through. He stepped down the egress ramp, stopping at the bottom in the knee-high grass to take lungfuls of Zonama Seacot's invigorating air. The sky was a vibrant blue, and a fitful wind stirred the flat, wide-bladed grass about their feet. Small clouds scudded overhead, partially obscuring the broad reddish face of Mobus, the giant world around which Zonama Seacot orbited. There was a powerful potential in the forest trembling behind everything, as though a psychic thunderstorm were about to burst.
Was that the mind of Zonama Seacot? Luke wondered. Was that what Vergère had felt when the living planet had become conscious all those years ago?
He put his ruminations aside when the two strangers approached.
Who are you?
The woman demanded. My name is Luke Skywalker, and this is my wife, Mara. We'd like to thank you for welcoming us.
You're not welcome, the male said sharply.
Mara frowned. But weren't you the ones that gave us the coordinates to...
We were ordered to do so,
the woman cut in. Yours is the first vessel to land on Zonama in more than 50 years, the man added.
Seacot has willed it, and so we obey.
You speak the names Zonama and Seacot as though they were separate things, Luke said. Why is that?
Seacot is the mind, the man said. Zonama is the planet,
the woman concluded. Then you are the Zonamans? Luke asked.
We are Faroans, said a voice from behind Luke.
He turned to find himself facing a blue-skinned woman, dressed similarly to the others, except her garments were entirely black. Mara had spun around, surprised, and dropped into a defensive stance. The corners of the woman's mouth turned up into a slight smile.
Forgive me for startling you. I mean you no harm. I am the Magister. I stand between Zonama and Seacot.
Mara relaxed slightly. Luke studied the new arrival with wary fascination. He couldn't tell exactly how old she was. Her force signature was odd too, as if he were viewing it through a rain-coated viewport.
Then I take it that you are the one we need to speak with, Luke said.
If you have anything to say, then yes, your word should be directed to me.
Luke nodded as he took a step toward the Magister.
We need to discuss the aliens you were recently fighting.
He indicated the sky with a glance. We know them as the Yuuzhan Vong, but in the past, I believe you have referred to them as the Far Outsiders. The Magister's face tilted, an expression of fascination spreading across it.
How do you know that?
A Jedi Knight who once visited here told her story to my nephew.
You speak of Vergère, then,
the woman said, nodding.
We remember her well, and fondly. She drew the Far Outsiders away, for a time.
Long enough for us to prepare for a second assault.
We are capable of defending ourselves now, as you have seen.
Luke nodded.
The demonstration we witnessed was impressive, to say the least.
A demonstration implies it was put on for your benefit, the male Faroan said.
Now, Raoul, the Magister cautioned gently. These are our guests.
No, Magister, the other woman said. These are intruders. They don't belong here. We should send them away immediately and forget about them.
Denial solves nothing, Dirac.
But Magister, said the woman, Dirac,
they bring with them violent changes. We have lived in peace for decades, and suddenly the skies are filled with the fire of war.
That is so, Luke said, and I fear there may be more to come.
You bring ill tidings, then,
Raoul said, glaring balefully at Luke.
It is always so with these Jedi Knights, Dirac added.
Wait, Luke said. Did you say knights? Have you had other Jedi knights here, apart from Vergère?
We have entertained more than one over the years, yes.
The Magister glanced reprovingly at the other Faroans.
In the past, the Jedi Knights proved to be our friends, our allies.
The regal woman studied the two humans before her with a piercing gaze.
I would very much like the chance to speak with your nephew, to exchange with him our memories of Vergère.
Send them away!
Durak hissed.
Don't listen to them!
The Magister laughed loudly at this.
Really, my friends, you go too far.
To Luke and Mara, she continued.
I beg you to forgive their disrespect. Their apprehensions are not unjustified. We have seen unstable times in the past, especially during the crossings, when we searched for a new home. Those times were hard on everyone. There were terrible upheavals, deaths, famine, plagues.
A fleeting sadness crossed the Magister's lined face.
There have been no visitors to Zonama for many years. We live in peace, and now conflict has returned to us. We are understandably concerned.
Luke nodded.
As are we.
The presence of the far outsiders here was unexpected, and is of grave concern. This is one of the many things we must talk about, and soon.
It shall be so,
the Magister said, a stern glance at Durak and Raoul indicating that she would brook no disagreement.
You will need to come with us then, the male Faroan said.
Where to? Mara asked, eyes narrowing.
To our village,
Durak said.
Okay, Mara said.
Tell us where it is and I'll fly us there myself.
That's not possible, Raoul said. Your vessel cannot come.
And how do you intend to stop me from...
I don't.
Raoul pointed to Jade Shadow.
Seacott has already taken care of it.
Mara's protest died on her lips as she glanced at her ship. The grass her yacht was resting on, along with vines that had crept unnoticed from the surrounding undergrowth, had invaded the ship, entwining around its landing struts. Green fronds peeked out of apertures and vents all along the underside, indicating that the intrusion was extensive throughout the ship. Jaina reached Pride of Salonia's dock seconds before the mob. The journey through the streets of Onadax had been arduous and fraught with danger. She hurried up the ramp to the ship's wide airlock and keyed in the appropriate security code. Before she had finished, however, the panel hissed open.
We've been waiting for you,
said Selwyn Markota, Captain Mayne's second in command.
We're ready to lift off.
The clamor of the mob behind her rose a notch as it reached the docks.
That would be a good idea.
Exhaustion rushed through her as Markota hurried through the corridors of the frigate. Gravity shifted minutely beneath her feet as the frigate left Onadax behind. Markota stopped outside the medical suite that Tahiri had been assigned.
They're waiting for you in here.
The first thing she saw when she entered the suite was Jag, rising from his seat with an expression of relief on his face. He was across the room in an instant, his big hands first touching her hair, then falling to her shoulder, which he gripped firmly but warmly. I'm glad you're okay. He moved aside then to allow her into the suite properly. With a single glance, she took in Tahiri on the bed, pale and comatose, in exactly the same position she'd been in since Bakura.
Sorry to interrupt the moment,
came her father's voice from the room's comm unit. Dad? She said surprised. Is Mom there with you?
I'm here, Jaina, her mother said.
Jaina sat on the edge of Tahiri's bed, taking the girl's hand loosely into her own. Sorry things didn't go as planned.
That depends, Leia said.
On what? Jaina asked. Did you find anything about the Rin?
Well, we heard from someone, but it wasn't who we expected. We picked up a passenger as we were leaving Onadax,
Han explained.
He's the right species, Leia added, but doesn't know much about what's going on.
And who is he exactly? Jaina asked.
He's Droma,
came a distinctly Rin voice over the comm.
Hey, I told you to wait in the hold,
she heard her father say.
What? You think I'm going to take your secrets and sell them to the Vong or something? Don't be so paranoid.
Jason helped Danny up from the floor of the passenger bay. Nearby, his uncle knelt by Saba and Tekli, gently rousing them.
Welcome back, Jason said.
How?
Danny started groggily.
How long was I out?
A few hours, he said.
We're here?
He smiled broadly.
Yes, we're here, Danny. Come see for yourself. We made it,
he thought, as he descended the ramp and set foot on the planet's soil.
We're actually on Zonama Seacot. What about Widowmaker?
Danny asked.
The other vessel will come to no harm as long as it remains in orbit,
came the voice of one of the Faroans from behind. Jason turned to see the two wading through the tall grass toward them. A groan in the direction of Jade Shadow announced the arrival of Soren Hegarty, the elderly professor of comparative religions, assisted by Luke and closely followed by Tekli. Saba wasn't far behind. The Barabel's expression was suitably awestruck, as the shock of displacement slowly faded.
It is time, the female Faroan said. We have a long walk ahead of us.
Are the trees of your forest safe?
Saba asked.
They are not trees, the woman said. They're called Boras, and they make up the Tampasi. They will harm you only if you attempt to harm them.
Without another word, the two Faroans set off across the field, their pace suggesting that either the visitors keep up, or they would get left behind. Jason's uncle turned to the Chadrafan.
Tekli, would you mind staying here and keeping an eye on Jade Shadow?
Of course, Master Luke,
Tekli said. Leia listened with interest to Droma's simple story. After rescuing his sister at Fondor, Droma and his family had drifted from place to place, as was their custom.
Then we heard about the Rin network.
We've only met two from this network so far, Leia said. There was one on Galantos, who saved us from a peace brigade trap, and Gower on Bakura, who sent us here.
He said that...
That someone would be waiting for you, Droma interrupted, nodding.
That sounds like them.
Are you able to tell us anything that might help us find the Rin we were supposed to meet here? Droma shrugged.
I would if I could, believe me. If you could drop me off somewhere in the Juvex sector, though, I'd be extremely grateful. I could work my way back to the others from there. If we're going that way, sure, said Han. What about Esfandia? Droma asked. You're going there, right? And Juvex is on the way. Esfandia, Han repeated, frowning. What's that when it's at home?
Esfandia is one of two small communication centers on the other side of the galaxy, Leia said. It services the Outer Rim. There used to be only one, Generis, but another was brought online at the beginning of the war.
Why would we go there? Han asked. You don't know what's happened?
Droma appeared genuinely shocked.
Generis has been destroyed by the Yuuzhan Vong, and Esfandia is under attack.
What has this got to do with us? Han asked. Does it really matter if we lose contact with part of the Outer Rim?
It's not just any part of the Outer Rim, Leia said. Generis and Esfandia were the only relay centers we have servicing the unknown regions. Take them out, and you effectively put the unknown regions out of contact.
On the Pride of Salonia, Jaina sat beside Tahiri through the long jump across the galaxy. Although by medical definition, Tahiri's condition was supposed to be stable, Jaina wasn't convinced. Outwardly, the girl appeared okay. But below the surface, Jaina sensed a terrible psychic disturbance that was only getting worse with time.
Jaina refused to just sit holding Tahiri's hand while the girl battled futilely against her inner demons. That was as good as giving up, letting Reina win. The only question was, what could she do about it? There was no way for Jaina to contact the Falcon or Twin Sun Squadron for advice. While they were in hyperspace, it was up to her and her alone. I don't care what her vital signs say, she thought. She's slipping away. I can feel it. Jaina closed her eyes, concentrating on forming the mind meld that the younger Jedi Knights used to share strength in battle. If Tahiri was losing the fight, perhaps all she needed was a little reinforcement. Tahiri felt something sweep over her, as though a deep ocean wave had just rolled by. She didn't dare look around, though, for fear of giving Reina the advantage in their duel. Her world consisted of nothing but those green eyes and the harsh humming of two lightsabers striking at each other in imperfect sync. But something had changed, and now primal instincts were whispering to her, warning of the dangers that this change would bring.
Did you feel that?
Although the voice came from her assailant, it reminded her too much of her own voice. I felt it, she replied, stepping to one side as Reina's lightsaber swung past.
Do you know what it is?
Tahiri sensed Reina's uncertainty, and her hands gripped her pommel a little tighter.
No,
she said, taking the lightsaber in both hands and bringing it down toward Reina's head. Reina blocked it easily, as though she'd been expecting it.
Something's coming,
Reina whispered. Reina leapt away, lightsaber poised defensively.
We could fight it together, she said.
Tahiri's body went cold as suspicion flushed through her.
Why should I want to do that? It's either that, or stand here while it picks us off. First one, then the other.
Ally herself with Reina? That was tantamount to giving in. A voice called out to her, carried on the dark wind that blew from the shadowed lands around them.
Did you hear that?
She asked Reina, beginning to feel truly frightened.
I heard it.
Reina's voice was colored with relief.
It's calling you. It doesn't want me.
Why me? Tahiri demanded angrily, slashing viciously at Reina three times in quick succession. Why not you?
I don't know,
answered Reina. Again, the voice boomed out of the shadows, sounding like the first rumble of a mighty wave crashing along the shore.
It's not honorable to keep your back turned to an enemy in a fight,
Reina said,
nor practical.
I can only face one enemy at a time, Tahiri responded, forcing Reina away with a series of aggressive blows. Without thinking, she turned to look. Darkness shrouded the world around her and Reina like fog. But to one side, it was parting, and pale light shone through the gap.
No! I won't let you kill us!
Reina flung Tahiri away from her and ran away into the fog. Startled, Tahiri fell to the ground, but in one bound was up again, chasing Reina, following her frantic footsteps. Whatever was coming for her out of the darkness, she didn't want to face it without knowing exactly where Reina was and what she was afraid of. Leia literally took a back seat during the flight to Esfandia. Trying to compete with her husband Androma was too exhausting, and ultimately, pointless. They'd hardly stopped talking since the Rin had come aboard. Bringing each other up to date on events since they'd parted at Fondor, they'd covered everything from sneaky tactics to Anakin's death. Leia concentrated on the information Droma had provided them. Communications had indeed been lost with the unknown regions. The destruction of the base on Generis and the attack on Esfandia appeared to be the source of the disruption. A free-floating proto-world, Esfandia had long since cut free from whatever star had given birth to it, but still had enough radioactivity bubbling in its core to sustain a liquid atmosphere. It wasn't the most hospitable of places,
But it didn't need to be. A skeleton crew of about a dozen people, mainly technicians, normally inhabited the relay outpost, which had been hastily converted from a scientific station at the beginning of the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. The conversation between her husband and his old friend shifted as the Falcon's console began to beep and flash, announcing that they were nearing their destination.
"Right on the nose," Han said proudly.
"And we didn't even have to get out and push," Droma said dryly.
"Yeah, that's real amusing," Han returned without smiling. "You remember how to operate the co-pilot's board?"
"Follow orders and curse when something goes wrong," Droma replied with a smile,
which it invariably does.
The navicomputer bleeped, cutting off any retort Han might have been about to offer. Both faced the front, just as the sweeping streaks of hyperspace dissolved into a cold and distant starscape. As Pride of Salonia, along with Twin Sun Squadron, emerged from hyperspace alongside the Falcon, Droma's eyes checked the sensor console for the orphan planet. The Falcon's sensor suite was still ahead of standard tech, and it soon acquired the target. It was covered with thick clouds and glowed a burnt orange in artificial colors that looked wrong to Leia's eyes, until she realized what was missing. Because Asfandia had no sun, its sole source of heat lay at its core. Closer scans, however, revealed that not to be entirely the case. There were at least 6 hotspots on the hemisphere facing them, and even as they watched, another blossomed into life. Droma zoomed in closer to examine the cause.
"Aerial bombardment," he said. "Someone's dropping mines from orbit."
"They're taking out the sensors," Leia said. "The Yuuzhan Vong are still here." Han's eyes darted across the displays in front of him.
"I've got a strong presence in close orbit. 7 capital vessels, 9 cruisers."
"Incoming,"
Droma announced.
"That's all we need," Han muttered. "Maybe it's time we bid a hasty retreat after all."
"Hold on." Leia switched vantage points to look over Droma's shoulder. "I don't think they're Yuuzhan Vong. Broadcast an emergency on the Imperial codes."
"Imperial?"
Han started, but clammed up at a glance at the scanner display.
"Well, I never thought I'd be glad to see a Star Destroyer."
Not just one of them, Leia noted. 2 of the massive vessels were lumbering out of hyperspace over Asfandia, fully equipped with support vessels and TIE fighters already streaming from launching bays. The way they swooped in to engage the Yuuzhan Vong filled her with an immediate sense of optimism and kinship. The Falcon's comm bleeped. It was Grand Admiral Pelion.
"I should have known I'd find the Millennium Falcon here," he said. "You're always at the heart of trouble."
Leia felt a smile creep across her face.
"It's good to hear from you, Galad."
"As it is you, Princess."
"That's not Chimera you're flying," Han put in. "It looks too old."
"It's right to rule. One of the oldest in the fleet. We've been chasing this sorry bunch halfway across the galaxy, trying to restrict the amount of damage they inflict. Are you joining us?"
"We're at your command, Admiral," Leia said.
"I'll have targets for you shortly. Commander Ansween will relay them to you."
Han looked up at Leia when the line closed a moment later.
"We're taking orders from an Imperial now?"
"Things have changed," she said.
The comm unit crackled back to life, this time with a female voice. Obviously the commander whom the Grand Admiral had mentioned.
"Your primary target is the destroyer Kerr Hashan. This is a Yamask-bearing vessel. Secondary targets are support vessels. Right to rule out."
Han punched a course into the navicomputer.
"You got that, Salonia?"
"Loud and clear,"
came back the voice of Captain Main.
"Jag?"
"Twin Suns awaits your orders, Captain."
"Are we about to do what I think we're about to do?"
Droma asked, somewhat nervously.
"You're the one always second-guessing everyone," Han replied. "You tell us."
"It doesn't take much foresight to know we're still outnumbered. While it's nice that we have company and all, it still only makes 2 Star Destroyers against 16 of the big uglies."
"I know," Han said,
a wide, familiar grin settling onto his face.
It makes it so much more interesting when the odds are stacked against you, don't you think?
Almost there, Han said, dipping the Falcon's nose a little deeper into the turbulent soup that was Asfandia's atmosphere. Leia clutched the sides of her rattling seat to prevent herself from being thrown to the floor, mentally keeping her fingers crossed the whole time. They had made it past the Yuuzhan Vong fleet easily enough. In the heat of the moment, one battered old freighter, feigning a death roll, would never warrant too much attention. From there, it was just a matter of getting undercover without displaying too many course changes.
This is definitely one of your crazier ideas, Droma said from behind them.
I'm getting us through this, aren't I? Han said.
This far? Yes, Droma said. He pointed to the viewport. But that's a whole lot of murk to be lost in.
We have radar survey of the surface of the planet, Han said calmly.
So all we have to do is find the station. Is that it?
Something like that, yeah.
Now, Han muttered, where do you suppose we should start looking?
Leia peered ahead and saw nothing but blackness. These icy depths knew no life, and should the bubble of hospitality within the Falcon be breached, it would kill them as soon as... Leia jumped, as something loomed out of the darkness, visible only as a bright orange splotch on the enhanced display, and shaped like a large quivering flower. It was gone before she had a chance to make out exactly what it was.
What was that? Droma asked.
I don't know, Han said. And I'm not about to go back to find out.
He arbitrarily set a reference grid over the barren landscape, steering the freighter across it.
There's a series of deep channels just east of here. I'm cutting our velocity and altitude to take a closer look.
Han swung the Falcon over a steep rise, then flattened out. Han hugged the canyon wall as closely as he could while they fell. Leia caught sight of two more of the odd flower-shaped objects whipping by and wondered what they might be. Pockets of gas? Crystal agglomerates? In the rear view, she saw nothing but wisps left after the Falcon had passed, and the fierce burn of the freighter's engine soon evaporated even those. The bottom of the canyon came with surprising suddenness.
Cutting main drive, Han announced. Dropping back to repulsors.
Leia kept her eyes on the sensors as the Falcon cruised through the depths, but there was little to see.
Can anyone see anything out there?
Nothing,
Droma said softly.
How big is this base meant to be anyway?
50 meters across, Leia said, not counting its legs.
So if it was here, it'd certainly stand out.
Leia nodded.
Then I guess it's not here.
Han scrolled through the radar map.
At least not in this canyon.
Hold it,
Droma said. His head was cocked in a manner suggesting that he was intently listening to some faint and far-off sound.
Are we scanning comm frequencies?
Across the dial, Han said.
Why?
Turn up the gain. Listen.
When Han did as he was instructed, a faint whistling became audible.
That sounds like a digital transmission, Han said.
Could it be the base? Leia asked, mystified.
I'm not sure, Han said. I can't get a fix on it.
It is a signal, though, right?
Droma asked.
Where's Goldenrod? He might be able to translate.
A display contained an image of the flickering, furious web of the space battle above, followed as much as was possible from the Falcon's viewpoint. The view showed two wedge-shaped fighter groups darting in different directions away from the Yuuzhan Vong fleet. Imperial forces engaged with one of them, but couldn't prevent them from reaching the atmosphere. Both groups of Yuuzhan Vong fighters dipped under the fog and disappeared.
Looks like we've got company, Han said.
Everything around Saba burned with a bright, potent vitality. With each lungful of air she took, she could feel the life force of the planet diffuse into her blood and spread to all the cells in her body. Only as a strange darkness fell over them did she stir from her reverent daze.
What is it? Saba asked. The others were all gazing up in obvious concern.
It's Mobus,
Soren Hegarty said.
We've fallen into its shadow.
Saba understood. She didn't need to see the gas giant in the sky above to know that the sun had slipped behind it as Onama Seacot continued on its orbit around the giant world.
We call it Sanctuary, Raoul said.
They walked on through the Tampasi, chilled by the unnatural darkness, as hushed as the world around them. The sun returned as the ground party approached the Faroan village an hour later. Dirac led them to a ring of brown, mushroom-like habitats, clustered around the base of a nearby boras. Each habitat had a central pillar that rose two stories high and was capped with a roof that bulged out and then down until it touched ground. Dirac led them to the largest habitat and waved them inside.
We will meet in 1 hour, she said, at sunset.
Without another word, Dirac and Raoul withdrew, leaving the visitors to make themselves at home. The ground floor contained a number of seating mats, scattered about in casual orderliness, along with several tables containing bowls and plates piled high with foodstuffs. Saba's stomach growled. She stepped over to one of the tables and dipped a claw into a bowl of an off-white paste. She cautiously sniffed at it before tasting.
Well? Danny asked, coming up beside her. What's it like?
Not obviously poisoned, Saba said.
Jason, Mara, and Hegarty joined them at the table. Jason was about to try some more of the food when he noticed three childlike faces with wide eyes peering around the entrance to the habitat at him. They disappeared with a giggle as soon as they saw him looking back at them. Nice to see that not all the Faroans hold us in contempt, Mara said at his shoulder. He was about to agree with her when Saba uttered a low, perplexed growl.
Saba? Mara said. What is it?
The Barabel shook her head uncertainly.
This one feels Seacot not just on the surface of this world, but beneath it too.
I've been wondering about that also, Jason said.
I'm sensing life below us as well as around and above us.
You mean in subterranean chambers? Mara asked. Jason shook his head.
In the rock itself.
That's not as crazy as it might sound, Danny said. Some species of bacteria can survive a long way underground, kilometers even.
Which might explain the planetary defense systems we saw in action, Jason said. Vergier talked about biological factories making spaceships and other things. If life is spread down into the crust, and perhaps even deeper, then Seacot could conceivably manipulate the planet on a grand scale.
Looks like you've made a friend, Mara said, her voice whispering close to his ear.
What do you mean? Jason asked.
She indicated the entrance with a nod. Turning, he saw that one of the little girls had returned and was staring in at him again. When she saw him look at her, she waved shyly and then quickly ducked out of sight with another giggle. Smiling, he went over to the doorway and looked around outside for her. The girl was standing near the base of a boros, ready to flee if she had to.
What happened to your friends? He asked.
They're scared, she said.
There's no need to be, he said. He extended his open hands in a no-weapons gesture.
See?
She pointed at his belt.
What about your lightsaber?
Jason was surprised by the girl's knowledge of the weapon, but he tried not to let it show.
You know about these?
The girl nodded.
What color is yours? She asked.
Color?
Then realizing, oh, my lightsaber. Would you like to see it? She shook her head in a definite no.
They're dangerous.
Not in the right hands, he said.
I would never hurt you, or anyone here.
Jedi Knights have other ways to hurt.
What do you mean?
Anakin killed the Blood Carver without a lightsaber.
That pulled Jason up with a start, and for a few seconds, he didn't know what to say.
Tell me, he said,
trying to keep the urgency out of his voice, the fear of what the truth might be.
What was the name of the other Jedi
who came here with Anakin.
Obi-Wan, she said. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Galad Pellion surveyed the battle from the bridge of Right to Rule. It was going as well as could be expected. The chunk of the retreating Yuuzhan Vong fleet that he'd been chasing from Imperial space had stumbled across Jannaris with eager destructiveness. Jannaris had fallen, and the Yuuzhan Vong had moved immediately on to Esfandia to repeat the insult. Pellion didn't consider it anything more than that. The commander in charge of the retreat, Beshith Vorik, wasn't a sophisticated strategist. "Watch the northern flank," he instructed one of his senior officers, indicating a section of the battlefield where the Yuuzhan Vong were managing to regroup. "Get a Yamask jammer in there now. I want that entire side as chaotic as possible." He was under no illusions that they would win. All they had to do was hurt Vorik long enough to make him reconsider his attack, and or rescue the hardware and crew aboard the relay station.
"Put me through to Leia Organa Solo."
"I'm afraid Millennium Falcon has dropped off our screen, sir."
"Destroyed?"
"Gone to ground in the atmosphere, sir."
Pellion nodded, satisfied with the assumption that the princess and her rough-and-ready husband had plans of their own. "Get me the commander of the Galactic Alliance frigate instead." Within seconds, a flickering, colorless hologram of Captain Todra Main stood before him.
"Your orders, Admiral?"
"I have a mission for your strike group," he said. "Can you spare 3 fighters?"
"We will if required to, sir."
"But you don't wish to?" he asked.
"To be honest, sir, we're doing some damage on that warship. With just 1/2 a squadron to watch our back, I'm not sure we'd be able to effectively keep up the attack."
"Don't worry," he said. "I'll make sure you get backup." The woman nodded, and the transmission ended. "Connect me to Colonel Fell," he instructed his aide.
"Twin One,"
came the almost instantaneous reply. "Colonel, I have a mission for 3 of your best pilots," Pellion said. "The northern flank is proving resistant to our tactics. There's a Yamask in there somewhere. I want it out of the picture."
"Understood, sir."
There was a slight pause.
"Any further instructions, Admiral?"
Pellion smiled. "Why don't you just surprise me, Colonel?" Jack frowned behind the controls of his clawcraft. "Surprise you, sir?
Do you have a problem with that, Colonel?"
"No, sir. I just..."
"Then carry out your orders. We don't have time to debate the matter."
The line fell silent, and Jag was left shaking his head. "Surprise me." The legendary Grand Admiral Pellion had asked him for a surprise. He had an idea where to start. What would Jaina do? A Yuuzhan Vong corvette and a cruiser analog, hugging the planet jealously in a low orbit, dominated the northern flank. Presumably the Yamask was in one of those 2 ships. Jag could see the importance of securing that section of the battleground, but sending 3 fighters against a cruiser, a corvette, and countless fighters was madness of the first order. What would Jaina do? He asked himself again, forcing himself to think laterally. Then, unexpectedly, a creeping sense of unreality spread over him. An idea had formed in his mind. It was, for all intents and purposes, surprising. He scanned the region around the northern flank. There. A dead gunship drifting like a lost asteroid, its biological systems slowly dying. He nudged his vector minutely closer to it, and his wingmates obediently and unquestioningly followed.
"I take it you have something in mind, sir?"
asked Enton Edelmage in Twin 8.
"I do," Jag replied.
"Behave as normal, and don't be surprised if I go into a spin for no reason. Just cover me, okay? Make sure nothing picks me off while I'm playing dead." He quickly double-checked the calculations. Yes, this could work. Then, gunning his engines, he swooped in to attack. Jaina struggled through blackness. She had never experienced a mind meld like this before. It was as though she were trying to swim through mud. She saw two figures dueling in a place that looked disturbingly familiar, glimpsed as though on a fogged screen. Tahiri's scarred, grim-faced mirror image had murder in her eyes. Although Jaina knew it to be Raina whom Tahiri was fighting, or hunting, she kept seeing Tahiri. The only way to separate them was by the hand that held the lightsaber. In the real world, Tahiri was left-handed, while Raina held hers in her right hand. Tahiri, can you hear me?
Krishna Baruch Kulhai.
A voice snarled in her mind.
Hurla Samga Akrimhu. Akrivushta.
I don't understand, Jaina said into the void. An image came of Tahiri's face, lunging out of the darkness, eyes glaring with hate. She flinched. I think it's time to get out of here, Jaina thought. When she attempted to break the meld, however, she found that she couldn't.